101.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Middle East Report on Drive Time.
That's what it is, Middle East Report, in conjunction with the London-based Middle East Monitor. Coming up, we're going to be having a look at the co-option of religion, now, this time, by Saudi's Mohammed bin Salman, this having been done by General Sisi some time ago. Syria's Assad says new U.S. sanctions are part of a drive to choke Syria. Israel uses Beirut blast as a pretext to change the mandate of the United Nations force in Lebanon. Online to tell us all about this is political analyst for the Middle East Monitor, Nassim Ahmed. And of course, Middle East Monitor can be reached at www.middleeastmonitor.com. Nassim Ahmed, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me, Shafiq.
Indeed, interesting story that you've got up on your site. Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia getting a fatwa, of all things, to justify the assassination of a former top intelligence official, Saad al-Jabri, who's been a bit of a thorn in his flesh. But what's interesting, I'm sure you'll agree, this fatwa comes just 13 days after the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. So the plot thickens like gravy, doesn't it?
Yes, this is one of the, I would say, the bombshell story in the Middle East at the moment regarding Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. I mean, this is the man you cited, Dr. Saad al-Jabri. He's thought to be the kind of person who can bring down Mohammed bin Salman. He's in Canada right now, living in hiding, fearing for his life. So he's filed a legal case against Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the U.S., in which he makes a number of allegations. And in one of the sections, he says that Mohammed bin Salman obtained a fatwa making legal, his killing, extrajudicial killing of al-Saadi. So he's carried out a number of assassinations against al-Saadi, this is Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and one of which was 13 days prior to the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. So if you look at the details of the legal documents, the killing and the assassination attempts, it's really reminiscent of the killing of and murder of Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul 2018. And not only has he been targeted, I mean, initially there was efforts to bring him back to the country, bribery, ransom, kidnapping his family, offering him jobs. So he recognized that these were all enticements to, bring him back to the kingdom. But he knows the kingdom better than anyone else. Having worked within the intelligence of Saudi Arabia for many, many decades, he knows how Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman operates. So he did not go back. He fled the country in 2017, actually, when the former Crown Prince was deposed, and then he fled to Canada. So that's where he is at the moment, hiding. But it's interesting. I mean, for me, the story is interesting because many of these autocrats and despots within the Middle East right now, on the one hand, they want to have a more secular country. So they will say, for example, we want a secular country, pointing to ISIS, pointing to the Muslim Brotherhood, saying we don't want religion in politics. But on the other hand, they use religion, they use religious institutions to buttress, in their favor. They'll get a fatwa from, Al-Azhar, or they'll get a fatwa from one of their leading shuyukhs in Saudi Arabia to support their claim, to support their repressive policies. Like, for example, just a couple of weeks ago, one of the imams in Saudi Arabia gave a fatwa that protest and demonstration is haram in Islam. So they'll use Islam as and when it suits their needs. So on the one hand, they call for secularism, but on the other hand, they'll use the religious institutions for their repressive and authoritarian policies, not just within the country, but also elsewhere in the U.S., in Europe, as this legal document shows.
Yeah, I mean, talking about religious establishments being co-opted. Darul Ifta in Egypt, for example, has completely lost its independence because it's now going to be coming into the cabinet of President Sisi, that it's going to be under the eyes of the president. Just sort of an anecdotal example of how disturbing this trend actually is.
Exactly. As your viewers would have heard maybe a couple of weeks back, Sisi got the authorization from his parliament to launch military operation in Libya if need be. So he has the authorization. And following that authorization, Al-Azhar gave backing to that, and also Darul Fatwa, as you mentioned, tweeted a number of comments saying that, you know, it was a religious duty upon Egyptians to support their country in any kind of military campaign that may take place in Libya. So you can see how you know they're trying to bring galvanize and coalesce all the religious establishment on their side if need be for any kind of foreign policy. But I mean, and these are the same people who have stoked fear and demonized Islamists, demonized Muslim Brotherhood, and this is how they have gained support from the West as well. The Western government support them mainly on the idea that they're not Islamists, they will not use religion to further religious war, but they're the ones who are using religious institutions, religious messaging, religious symbolism to carry out, to impose authoritarianism on their people. So it's quite hypocritical in my view.
No, absolutely. And it certainly is right now spelling disaster for Mohammed bin Salman, whose credibility is reaching newer lows almost by the month.
Definitely. And the biggest fear for him now, I think he feels kind of the wall is closing in around him, especially if Trump loses the next election. He relies a lot on President Donald Trump. Now, if you have someone like Biden coming in, he will be a lot more critical. He said he will open up the Khashoggi files once more. And as you know, the CIA has already concluded that Mohammed bin Salman is responsible for the murder of Khashoggi. And one of the reasons why they made that conclusion was because of Assad. He's the one who works closely with the CIA and provided evidence to suggest that MBS was the one who authorized the murder of Khashoggi. So he fears this person. He fears the fact that he is so close to the CIA. So if now Biden comes in into power, I think there will be much, much more pressure on Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia may not have an open door to the White House as they've had over the last 4 years. And we may see them turning to Russia and to China. So we'll see how this plays out. But definitely, I mean, he feels the walls are closing in around him. And Trump is, according to the current polls, he is very likely to lose the next election. And the good years they've had over the last 4 years, so to speak, is going to come to an end. And his vision for 2030, which is quite ambitious, is going to be completely derailed if American business community are unwilling and are fearful of working with him, thinking that this is a person who's got blood on his hands. So there will be difficult times coming for Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, not just domestically, but also internationally.
Indeed, and we move on to Syria's Bashar al-Assad saying new United States sanctions are part of a drive to choke Syrians. This is more reflective of a rather ad hoc approach by the U.S. towards Syria right now. You know, Trump hasn't been very decisive in terms of Syria, and let's face it, U.S. is no longer a big player there right now in any case.
That is true. These sanctions have been planned for many, many years now, and it's just recently they've been authorized, and the sanctions calls for Assad and people around him, and including states like Russia and China, who have been aiding Assad. They will be put in the sanctions list. But to me, as you mentioned, you know, I think they are overreaching here. Assad doesn't, I mean, the Assad regime, people within the regime, they don't really have many assets within the U.S. I don't know how this will prevent them from actually deposing Assad or expediting any kind of resolution to this Syrian conflict. If anything, what this is doing, it's hurting the Syrian people. They're the ones who are suffering because of the economic sanctions, although the Americans claim that is not their intention, but the real reality is that that is what is happening. And this is not something new, of course. I mean, Syria has been on sanctions for many, many years, from the time Bush and now gave his axis of evil speech in 2001. Syria has been in some form of sanctions since. This is just another iteration of that ongoing sanctions on Syria. But nothing has changed. And I think if you look at politics, I mean, you are likely to have more impact on a country if you have economic ties with those countries, because those countries become reliant on you. They become dependent on you. And if they become more dependent on you, there's more chance that they will listen and heed your advice. So, of course, Assad has a lot of blood on his hand. You know, he's a tyrant. He's a despot. He's done awful things. But if the sanctions are supposed to bring an end to the conflict, I don't see how that's going to achieve that goal.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see President Bashar al-Assad and his presidential entourage going to Disneyland in the near future, to be honest with you.
Of course, and that's the whole problem with those sanctions. He assumes that senior officials within Assad's circle have interests within the U.S. I don't think they do. Why would they? So targeting the family and the inner circles of the Assad regime in an effort to bring down the regime or pressure him to make some kind of a deal, I don't see how that would work in the long term. I mean, Russia is on his side, China is on his side, he has two major powers with him. So there has to be some other way of forcing him, if not forcing him, encourage him, I guess, you know, if that is what is required to bring an end to the conflict, allow the refugees to return to Syria, allow for the reconstruction of Syria. If that is what is required, if that is your goal, then that is not the method. You know, in more sanctions is not the way to do that. It's a strange one.
And of course, we all knew that the Beirut blast would have repercussions all around the region. And here we see Israel using the Beirut blast as a pretext to try and change the mandate of the United Nations forces in Lebanon. Looks like Israel is quite nervous.
It is nervous, but I think what it's trying to exploit this situation, as you know, the United Nations mandate is renewed every year, and the mandate renewal is coming at the end of this month. And during these periods, there's always calls to expand the mandate, which is to give the UN forces more power, which could mean, you know, allowing them to search, impose, go into houses, do searches, but that will only cause more tension within the community. So the peacekeeping force has been careful not to allow to become a tool for the Israelis as being a police force for the Israelis by going after Hezbollah. But Israel wants to, is trying to pressure the UN to expand the sanctions so that it comes down hard on Hezbollah. But I don't see how that will happen. They've resisted all along. But this may be an opportunity, this explosion may be an opportunity to put the blame on Hezbollah and say that, you know, Hezbollah is not working in the interest of the Lebanese people, and this is an opportunity to isolate them and remove any kind of support and marginalize them and weaken them within the Lebanese government.
Would you see recent attacks on Gaza as playing into what we're discussing here, that by attacking Gaza, that Israel is trying to show to Hezbollah, to Iran, who is said to support Gaza, it's like sending a message, don't mess with us, we're still around, and if you do anything, we're going to hit you hard.
Yes, I suppose, I mean, these attacks on Gaza happen all the time. You're referring to the more recent ones. Israel is always sending messages to the three H's, as it calls Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas. And this is another way of taking them back undermining any ability they have to develop as a nation, as a community, as a party, and have any kind of ability to threaten Israel. So any threats to Israel by any of these three H's, Hezbollah, Hamas, is targeted. So if you look over the last couple of months, for example, a number of Hezbollah targets were destroyed by Israel. Iranian targets were destroyed by Israel, and this is this against international law, I should add. But this is always a means to prevent these groups from becoming a threat to the Zionist state. So everyone has to remain weak and disempowered and alienated and weakened as long as Israel can remain the dominant force within the region. So that's the thinking behind all this. And then the recent attack on Gaza is the case in point. And Qatar, many of you would have noticed, many of you would have read if you read memo, that Qatar has complained about this, that is finding it difficult to export goods, export humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza because Israel has restricted access to the 2 million Palestinians who are suffering, who are in need of essential humanitarian assistance from Qatar. Qatar is one of those countries that has actually stepped up in supporting the Gazans, along with Turkey and a number of other countries. But their efforts is undermined. Constantly undermined, not least by what's happening recently, by blocking the borders, blocking the efforts to distribute aid and humanitarian assistance to Gaza.
Nassim Ahmed, political analyst, the Middle East Monitor. You can catch them at www.middleeastmonitor.com. Everything we've been discussing this afternoon, you'll find something of it on their website. Twitter handle at Middle East MNT. Nassim Ahmed, thanks for chatting to us. And same time next week, we'll discuss some more issues.
Thank you, Shafiq. Bye-bye.
Middle East Report on Drive Time.